It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Welcome to Eco Talk, a very exciting edition for you, I guarantee it. Well, the times they are a-changing, the world it is a-changing and sizzling, too, in many places. And we're adapting and evolving here at Eco Talk as well. Today, we're going to hear how Walmart, yes, we're going to be speaking with a top-level executive at Walmart, how they're evolving towards a more sustainable business model. Walmart's Andy Rubin and NRDC's Ashok Gupta will lay out Walmart's ambitious green goals. The Amazon rainforest is changing as well, unfortunately going in the wrong direction. It's transforming into a desert, thanks in part to a long drought, probably caused in part by global warming. Dan Nepstead from the Woods Hole Research Center will give us the latest. Finally, we'll sit back and we'll need it. Have a glass of wine with Jonah Beer. I did say Beer, B-E-E-R, from Frog's Leap Winery, who will tell us how global warming, yep, it keeps coming up, may be impacting vineyards and how Frog's Leap is leaping in to try to do something about it. So without further ado, want to mention what you all know, that few institutions in the world have a greater influence on consumers, our cities, our towns, and yes, our environment and global production distribution than Walmart. With a recent visit by Al Gore to Walmart headquarters for a screening of his film, An Inconvenient Truth, and the announcement by Walmart's CEO Lee Scott of ambitious efforts by Walmart to reduce their ecological footprint, the time is ripe for a conversation with Andy Rubin, Walmart's VP of Sustainability. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll also be joined in the next segment by Ashok Gupta. He's with the Air and Energy Program, director of that program for the National Resources Defense Council. We were thrilled to hear that you had invited Al Gore, our hero this summer, many Americans' hero, for a screening of his brilliant film, An Inconvenient Truth, and that Al and Tipper Gore had dinner with the CEO, Lee Scott, and his wife afterwards. Why? Because we knew that once they all see that movie, there's no going back. What led to the decision to invite Gore to Walmart and to screen the film at the company headquarters? He didn't have to go too far from Tennessee to Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. It was really about climate. So it was the opportunity to have business leaders, you know, in Northwest Arkansas and for suppliers together talking about climate. And that film, I mean, that film, it's hard to see that film without seeing what is going on.
Exactly.
So that film was part of the day that we talked about what we are doing, what we can be doing, and how much more there is to go.
And did it surprise a lot of people? Because those of us who have been following these issues and even, you know, seen Al Gore's presentation, even to us it was, because it was all brought together in a way that was so compelling and so convincing, and you see those melting glaciers that you cannot be moved. But I imagine a lot of folks who work for Walmart, in fact, many folks in the country, just really weren't aware of all these realities.
I think that's exactly right. And we also had about 150 senior executives from different suppliers. And these are large Fortune 50 companies. And the emails that have come, you know, the email chains that I've seen go by since the event, not only were people in Walmart moved, but, you know, the ability of people who were there to take that back to their companies and comments, you know, that people might not have realized really what was going on, or a second part about what business can be doing to be addressing things today.
Now, I want to talk about, you know, what's gone on before this and step back a bit. Maybe we can get back to Al Gore's talk, which is very interesting. I read some excerpts. It almost sounds like a revival, you know, and people were, you know, had tears in their eyes and standing ovation, which, you know, happened in San Francisco with a group of Sierra Club members and guests. But, you know, Walmart, that's something different. So where did this begin? Where did Walmart's commitment to sustainability begin? And, of course, there's many cynics who say, well, they had to do something, you know, to get some good PR. And there's many, many cynical people out there. But we've been watching what you're doing. Many have. And it seems genuinely sincere, and given your huge imprint and footprint, it has to make a difference. And as I said before we started taping, you know, there's no going back. Once you know too much, well, you got to change.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And when we started, started more formally thinking about environment, it was absolutely defensive. It was a starting point. And we started to think about the, you know, the ways that we do impact things, whether we know it or not, the unintended consequences. What started to happen, though, and what started to change is the more steps we took and the more support, the more opportunities that we saw as actually part of the business. And that's what's hard to not, I mean, that's what you don't go back from. And so every time you saw more of that success, and maybe we can get into some examples of what's going on, the more that you keep propelling that forward and it catches on and starts moving faster and faster.
We definitely want to get to some of the specific programs that I hope are underway, not just in the planning stages. But first, you know, you have to acknowledge your problem before you can address it. And all corporations do have an ecological footprint, institutions. I mean, we as a culture certainly have a huge one in America. So when you began to evaluate Walmart's environmental impact, what practices did you find most in need of change? And I can hear a lot of people saying, oh, where to begin? But where did you begin?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, you begin everywhere. We actually started with our own practices. So we look at things like the fleet operations, you know, as we move product to stores, the stores themselves, the efficiency of the stores, even the data servers. Then what started to happen is we started to realize that, my gosh, you know, 90% of what we're looking at is actually back up the supply chain. The fact that things have been, the packaging was produced in the first place is the bigger, and it's about 9-to-1. And we started looking at the efficiency of the manufacturing processes and all the way back to the supply chain. The part that we continue to be amazed by now is the front part of that, which is what happens in the stores. And that's kind of an even broader take on the overall footprint, which is the ability to influence consumer products, consumer awareness, and create a journey that is not our journey. It becomes a much broader journey.
What about the ability to impact your some 60,000 suppliers? I mean, that you talked about the front end, and that's really important, but you have an ability to influence your vendors as well.
Absolutely, and that's that 9-to-1. So it's about 90% of the footprint just, you know, back to the supply chain through our stores actually exists within the supply chain.
And what kind of response are you getting from them?
You know, for the most part, very excited. I think absolutely some people are skeptical. And then that's where it's our job to motivate and to reward those suppliers that start moving forward, that take early action, to try and cut through the greenwashing and focus on actually the principles. And then,
so you've heard that word before, greenwashing.
Absolutely.
You guys you're pretty savvy, you know. I mean, a lot of people would just be so cynical that they would say, oh, they're just greenwashing. But obviously, if you start with that premise, expecting many folks to see it that way, you got to go deeper.
You know, one interesting, and I won't call it a benefit of the criticism, but one interesting aspect of where we sat even 2 years ago was we're not going to address things by focusing on criticism and trying to correct criticism. You know, we're going to make progress when we take a look at what we can do better, we reach out to people who can help us see more opportunity, and we start taking action.
Well, speaking of doing better, you have three very ambitious goals. One is to be supplied 100% by renewable energy. Another is to create zero waste. I got to tell you, when I started this beat 9 years ago, I went to my first zero waste conference, and I thought they were crazy, and that was way so ambitious given, you know, the amount of trash that we throw away every day here in America, and then Walmart, of course, being responsible for some of it. So that's huge. I just have to acknowledge you for taking that on. And then last but not least, to sell products that sustain our resources and our environment. That one's a little fuzzier, but the first two are really concrete and quantifiable. What's your time frame?
You know, all three of those that you mentioned, they're aspirational, and they are bold by design. So there is no way to make the progress that's possible if you don't have a bold aspiration out there. What we have, though, within each of those is we have much more near-term goals. So the 100% renewable energy, we've got a near-term goal of fleet being 25% more efficient in 2 years and doubling within 10. That's baseline last year, so that's within 9 years from now. You mentioned waste. So within 2 years from now, we'll have 25% less waste, solid waste coming from stores. And when you think about what that does at the supply chain, if we can eliminate things that currently are going into dumpsters, all of a sudden then you're having phone calls with suppliers that might include, we don't know supplier X why you're sending us this in styrofoam. We can't get any value for it. It's just going in the dumpster. And you actually start influencing processes all the way back.
And many companies, large and small, have already begun reducing waste and increasing their energy efficiency. And surprise, surprise, it does help the bottom line. Have you begun to see this happening on a Walmart scale?
Absolutely. In fact, that is one of the things that when we talk about surprises along the way, we originally thought that this is something that was going to cost money, that this was going to be a trade-off between business and the environment. And we have seen again and again and louder that is anything but true, that we've seen substantial savings. This, you know, it's hard to separate this from a business opportunity, and maybe we could talk about a few examples.
Yes, right after the break, we're going to have to wrap up here for a moment, but we are going to continue this conversation with Andy Rubin. He's Walmart's Vice President of Sustainability. And after the break, we're going to be joined by the NRDC's Ashtok Gupta. He's working on their market transformation team. They actually have a Walmart team. So this is being taken seriously, not only by the company of Walmart, the corporation of Walmart, but also a very serious environmental group, one of our environmental partners, NRDC. So again, once you start these alliances, once you start these conversations, you know, there's no going back. So if I sound a little excited about this, forgive me, you real deep activists. I'm not selling out, really. I just think this is the great green hope, and it is a great big green elephant. We'll be right back. I wanted to seize you, but I'm no good with machine red.